Brad is on the line. Hi, Brad, how are you?
I am Ryan, as I assume you are.
I am, too. Yeah, I'm perfect. Yeah, well, this is really good. Springing off our last podcast, you seem to have gone much deeper into this brain and servo mechanism and the way it works. This is very informative. I'm actually really glad that you did this article.
Well, that was the article I was talking about, and I guess we spent more time on the last podcast talking about it than we did that article.
Well, maybe because this is the most important part. How about that?
Okay.
Yeah. So
you like it, huh?
I like it a lot. I don't want to waste any time patting you on the back. I want to get right into it. What is a miracle? A supernatural event.
Well, people think of it.
Why do you think they think of it as a miracle? Why do you think people look at what probably is a simple natural phenomenon that your body's supposed to do? Why do they call it a miracle?
Well, it's like we look at so many things. Frankly, I still look, if I allow myself to, I'll still look at a 747 taking off and think of that as a miracle. Sun coming up is a miracle. You know what I mean?
A bumblebee flying through the air, a miracle.
Yeah, what we think of, you know, what we think of, because we're programmed, we've assimilated it into our brain that these things are all real, therefore, and we've so also assimilated into our mind the authoritative voices of the day. I'm thinking specifically of the medical profession as an example. And so we believe whatever doctor or, you know, expert we've decided to glom onto as our guru, that what he says is in fact the truth. So that when there's healing that comes along, and I'm just using it as an example, but when there's healing that comes along, when somebody finally, the doctor says you're terminal, go home and die, and there's no other hope for you. They cut off everything but the heavy-duty drugs to keep you sedated and as pain-free as possible, as comfortable as possible. You finally are desperate enough to look at something else. And then your family, who has been accustomed to assuming you're going to die, all of a sudden you're alive and the cancer or whatever else was killing you is gone. It's a miracle. No, it's not a miracle. You just got, and which is really apropos for this article, you just got the brain under the direct command of the source, the healer of the universe, who says you're healed, and you are. And so, well, it's supernatural.
So what makes it supernatural is that it can't be explained by some rational thought process or some expert who knows how it happens.
Well, you know, in looking back at that article, and I wrote that article quite a while ago, it's been kind of sitting in the queue, and what I said in that article is, how do you explain any of it? You know, that's some stuff there that is old hat to you and me, like references to Dr. Gouet.
Sure, I came across that phrase through Jose Silva rather than Gouet. But you touch on the story, which is one of your favorite stories, with the boy with epilepsy who throws himself in the fire when he has a epileptic fit. That's my word, of course. It doesn't say anywhere epilepsy. And then Jesus gives his disciples a hard time, saying that they need to get rid of that agent by proper preparation with fasting and prayer. And I'm wondering, you've had a lot of interaction with agents, spirit agents, that were creating problems in people's lives. Did you always fast and pray?
No, I had the breakthrough for dealing with them from fasting and praying. I rarely fast anymore. I do it on occasion. But I was in a, quote, deliverance ministry with a very well-known evangelist who had a huge, quote, deliverance ministry. I've told the story somewhere, I don't know, but I don't think on our website. But I got tired of all the stuff that we went through that seemed like mumbo-jumbo to me, you know. And it just seemed like ancient rites of exorcism, and they didn't do a whole lot of good.
Right.
In some cases there were dramatic happenings. But I kept asking, you know, why do we go through all this stuff? And, you know, give me something that I can really, you know, pin to it. If this is true, then I know it's true because I saw demons manifest in crazy ways and heard them scream and come out and see, you know, people vomit and cancers up and all that kind of stuff. And I'm praying about it. I stumbled across that passage in Matthew 17. Nothing shall be impossible. And the whole key was, he said, you know, that kind of spirit, that's how I interpreted the passage. People argue with me over that. Some don't, some do. But to me, that's what he was talking about. They wanted to know why they couldn't get rid of that particular spirit that was causing those epileptic-like seizures. And he said, because you don't have enough faith. And that's it in the original. You do not have enough faith. You don't believe enough.
So then he goes on to say, but doesn't he say that this kind only comes out with much prayer and fasting?
Yeah. And of course, I asked him what that meant. And he said that means preparation. Think of preparation. You have to prepare yourself. And then I understood why he got so mad at his disciples and called them a bunch of faithless perverts. Literally, that's what he said in the original language. And because they hadn't prepared themselves. They'd already gone out, you know, two by two, those 12 plus 70 others also. It's told, I like the way it's portrayed in the Gospel of Luke. They'd already cast out demons. They'd already been doing this stuff, and they thought they could. You know, anyway, this is what got me booted out of a denomination. Let's not get into it. But anyway, yeah, I stumbled across the passage, and this, you only can do this by preparing with much fasting and much prayer. And so I had to start looking at what kind of prayer, which she led me to, and what kind of fasting. I mean, going without food. And the first time was a few days, and the next time was 10 days, and then I got crazy and went into the months, and from that I realized what I had. Sometimes I feel the need to get back to a connection from fasting, but most of the time I'm instructed not to. I don't have to, you know.
Yeah, I haven't been instructed to for quite some time either. And I used to make it a regular thing. I never can't really say I've gone into the months, but definitely the weeks. And I've never noticed that it made a difference in regards to authority over spirits. So I guess maybe I've never come up against that particular one. Anyway, moving on into your article, you're suggesting that to facilitate what's going on, we need to choose, in other words, decide to make a commitment. How do we decide to make a commitment? What's the mechanism? What's the process for that?
Well, Lord gave me the definition of that word once. Decide, decision, means of the cut. It literally comes from, I think it's, I don't know what language it was, but it's certainly Old English, and D means of the, and side is cut. So a decision means to lop it off. Cut everything off. We have the ability with our brain to say, okay, this is it. I'm committed. I'm going to use an example. Somebody asked me today how many laps I had done at the pool. And I told him 60. Oh, well, you did 90 the other day or something. And I said, yeah, well, I have a commitment to do a minimum of 40. So it's always between 40 and 100. You know, today I did 60. I didn't even feel like doing 40, but I did 60. And the point is that I don't do less than 60. I mean, less than 40. Because I have committed. I've locked off all other possibilities. Now, when you start looking at that word, it's an intriguing thing, because incision, what I wrote about, is going inward before you make a decision, which we do by asking our spirit parent, you know, what should I do? And he gives you preciseness. So the precise is what we do before we do something. It's a pattern. The precision is cut according to a pattern. Isn't that interesting about the words?
It is, but I'm not so sure that it's as simple for everyone else as you just described it is for your swimming. You know, let me give you an example. A lot of people make a decision that they're going to lose some weight, and then they end up falling off that, or a decision not to drink alcohol, or a decision to get a different job, or, you know, there are lots of decisions made all the time that don't end up in the right place. I think you might be oversimplifying it a bit.
No, I'm not. The key is the word and what the word means. They haven't made a decision. They haven't locked off all other possibilities. See, it's a commitment. A decision, really, we better change the word to making a commitment, a firm commitment. This will be, it is, that's what I'm going to do, and it's a firm commitment. You know, I hear people say, and you just use the example, that's not a decision. It's nothing. It's just a whimsy. You know, I've got to, or I'm going to someday. You know, that's what they mean by it.
Yeah.
But to decide, and the brain has the power to do that, and that's the whole point of it being a cerebral mechanism, is this is going to be. And you command it.
Well, Let's talk about maybe a little bit about Dr. Koo's work in France. How successful was this doctor?
According to the main book about him, thousands. He had several clinics I think it was three or four clinics. They were free. He quit his medical practice, his attendant practice, and had started off with these free clinics, where that's all he would do is teach his patients how to, actually, if you stop and think of it, that's, I guess, where I'm getting the command or demand your brain to do whatever. You know, his was every day in every way, I'm getting better and better. And I've modified that on my fast food track I call, moment by moment, day by day, I'm getting better and better in every way. And saying that 20 or 30 times a day until it's embedded in your mind and you think it and you know it. It's the same old thing about our anti-aging process, getting younger every day.
Right. So he was fairly successful, and you're tying that to bringing every thought captive into Christ.
Yeah, I just think it's a great scriptural link, if you would, that if I know that I'm in union, if I'm at one with my spirit parent, and I am, and that comes through declaration too, once you understand it, that you begin to understand that this mouth of ours, you know, the Apostle Paul said something like salvation, it comes from speaking it. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm way off course here.
No. So you're really talking about training the brain, and that's something that you actually say in your article is training the brain, and bringing every thought into captivity as part of that process, and training the brain to understand that, you know, what Jesus said about I have come that you might have abundant life. I want to argue a little bit with you, and say that you can perhaps use the conscious mind to train your conscious present day in the moment thoughts, but I'm not so sure you can overcome your subconscious thoughts, which are patterns laid down from years and years of history. You know, I'm not so sure it's as easy as what you're presenting here. You know, like you say, bring every thought captive unto Christ. Well, that's a nice thing to say. How do I overcome the subconscious mind? It's already pre-programmed.
Back to Kuwait's patients. They were programmed to believe that they were seriously ill. Tuberculosis is one of the things that here he's doing it on, the thing of getting them to reprogram their subconscious. It's auto-suggestion. Again, it's automatic. If you keep saying it and saying it and saying it and think it, it will be. You have to believe it enough to keep doing it until it happens. But it happens. Let me ask you a question, Ryan. Are you getting younger every day?
Yes.
Well, that was programmed. How'd you do it?
How did I do it? Through a process, I guess. But I had to overcome two things. I didn't just do what you said, too, because my logical mind kept coming up with reasons why I was going to die. And examples of why what I was talking about or auto-suggesting to myself or programming my brain to believe was totally ludicrous. And so I'll give you an example. I'd be driving down the street and I'd see a three-story house and I'd go, I probably don't want one of those when I get old. Well, that's subconscious thought coming up again, right?
Sure.
And so the concept of living forever or having health and vitality for as long as I so choose to have it, whether that's living forever or not, I don't want to, split hairs. That concept has a logical component to it for me. It's not just a matter of faith. There's some logical programming in my brain that I need to overcome with some equal and opposite logic. And hence, I spent a lot of time doing some homework on some genetics and some current technologies that will probably extend human lifetimes indefinitely, if not for a considerably longer period than they currently are at, if there's a will to do so. My point being is that I had to convince myself logically as well as spiritually that I have that option. So, and that's me. Maybe you didn't have to go through that, but I'm a very analytical, logical thought process person. That's who I am.
Yeah, it's painful to me that that's how you are. Yeah, I'm kidding. Okay, well, let's get back to what, to me, what the meaning of bringing every thought captive under Christ means.
Okay.
It means every time I have a logical thought, I'm aware of it, and I say, hey, Dad, help me not to allow preconceived ideas, stuff, and I mean by that stuff that's embedded in my subconscious or unconscious mind, not to allow that to rule me. I don't want that to rule me. I want to live by your will. I know His will and His perfect health.
Well, now you've answered my question when I asked you how you do that. You've explained it very well, exactly how you do that. You say, specifically, Dad, I don't want my preconceived notions to rule me. I want what you say to be true.
And that's training the brain.
And that's a very good tool. Thank you. I'll put that in my toolkit, and I'll use it next time, and something like that pops up for me. I won't bother with the logic. I won't bother with the genetics. I won't bother with any of that stuff. I'll say what you said.
You mean to tell me you're going to stop being a pain in the ass?
Yeah. Moving on in your article. Well, actually, it's moving on in your article, but it's germane to the conversation we have right now. In the third to the last paragraph, you say there's little point in training the brain to cooperate with our spirit parent for abundance if there's an active force pledged to defeat us and we unwittingly give it power to destroy us. I don't think that that's the only dynamic in this play. It's not just about the unseen enemy or the prince of the air. And I'm not so sure that he's pledged to defeat us in the way that you're suggesting. Otherwise, he would find ways to overcome what you just suggested.
Let me ask you something.
Go ahead.
You remember Jesus saying to his disciples, and I say he said it to us by extension, I give you all authority over the works of the God of this world. He also said that he has one purpose, and that's to destroy his body bags that we've decided to occupy and to break our spirit connection with our spirit parent. Now, I happen to believe that. And so that's where I come from, and I'm sorry about that. I'm apologizing to you for my belief system. It's hanging out there.
No. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. I'm suggesting that the end goal may not be what it is, and I'm not sure that training your brain is a way to overcome that. But what you're saying here is that we unwittingly give power to somebody else to accomplish that. And I would agree that with not only unwittingly, I would also say, I want to add unknowingly.
That's, to me, what unwittingly means is unknowingly.
Okay, fair enough.
We're saying the same thing.
We are saying the same thing. So now you wanted to talk about the last paragraph. What, you wanted to bring some in?
In fact, stop. Right now, as dad, you should do the following. Tell your brain authoritatively that you want it to align itself perfectly with the will of our spirit parent. And tell dad, right now, that is all you want for your life. His perfect will to work out everything for your better good. Then it came tumbling at me. And I was, wow, yeah.
Yeah, rather than the will of your previous parents, your friends, your family, your other people who have influence in your life, this unseen enemy that we're talking about all the time. Because we seem to align our will with that a lot, don't we?
Sure, my experience. And what's amazing to me is the conversation I have with some people who say that enemy doesn't even exist, and yet their lives are ruled by it.
I find that hard to accept that people would actually say that.
That's why I invited that to do a podcast with that person. And that was her claim, and I wanted to hear it. She speaks it eloquently, but it's crazy.
Okay, so who knows? Maybe she's taking the viewpoint that it's all illusion. And the whole battle is illusion, and it's not real. It's not real. It's made up.
Maybe it is.
Maybe it is. And maybe we're participating in something we shouldn't be participating in. We'll have to ask Dad about that again.
Yeah. Now there you go. Bringing every thought captive.
Well, I certainly don't want my preconceived notions to have anything to do with that now, do I?
Nope.
That's what you said earlier. I'm practicing already. Thanks, Brad.
What you said?
I'm working on it. This has been great. This is a really good article. Thanks, Brad. I really appreciate your time today.
Hey, thank you so much for the call, Ryan. I appreciate you.
Talk to you soon. Bye.